This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. We're back with G1 coverage and some other tournaments, plus other shows that didn't involve tournaments. Isn't that weird, Dylan, in the summer of 2023, where every company is running a tournament, there's companies that aren't even running a tournament?
There are so many companies out there, Striga. Yeah. Not all of them have the same ideals. Not all of them have the same vision. Some people not only will not have tournaments right now, but maybe they'll have tournaments at other parts of the year. So there's no law, to my knowledge. I mean, I'm not an expert in the law, but as far as I know, there is no law that says you must run a tournament.
I don't know about that. We need to see the rule book of Japanese wrestling for that.
I mean, that's an even deeper... There's an unwritten rule book that is even deeper than any law book of wrestling, so we may need to check that as well.
I got this written encyclopedia, but I'm obviously not able to read it because it's in Japanese. Like, it's written in kanji, so it's too unfortunate for me.
And it's even harder when it's unwritten.
Yeah, I need Google Lens for that, but that's really a hassle.
I mean, if it's unwritten, it's unseen, you can't even see it.
Yeah, even Google Lens wouldn't work out.
No, that's not going to work at all. So you need to come up with a backup plan, my friend.
Yes, yes. Oh, let's wait and see what works there for me. But somebody needs a backup plan as well, Dylan, because we're in deep waters in the G1 climax, whereas we had a very, very good day 5 of the tournament in Nagaoka. We had a very... very rough day thereafter in Nagano. Of course, the show in Nagaoka was on Friday, then Saturday was off, and the show in Nagano on the Sunday. We are recording this on the Monday, the free day of the G1 climax. Looking back at these two shows, Dylan, where do you stand right now with your feelings towards this tournament?
Obviously, our feelings now are going to be a lot worse after night 6 than they were.
We should have done the show on Saturday, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we would have been super positive on night 5 if that had happened. But unfortunately, we have this instead. We had this night 6 show because, I mean, it really is a tale of two shows. And one of them was really good, one of them was really bad. So, and, you know, it's the thing is, though, we're entering these waters now. And I've kind of been leading up to this and talking about it during the tournament. There really aren't any big matches that are grabbing fan interest. And hopefully now that they're going back to Tokyo, we can see a little bit more of that. Yeah. And I think it drug on the fans, and the wrestlers didn't want to put in full effort on these small tour shows, especially on night 6 for whatever reason. But I mean, on night 5, they showed up. So we're just in the middle of the tournament. People are taking days off. And I mean, we've already seen an injury, I guess, as well, like which we'll talk about on night 6. So, it's just, the thing is, though, the underlying problems, even on night 5, which was a much better show than night 6, the underlying problems of the tournament are still there, in that there really is no spark or buzz to what we're seeing right now. You know, and I don't think we've gotten really any closer to knowing what's going to happen in terms of the tournament part, like the after the block play. We're not really seeing a lot of energy for this tournament, a lot of enthusiasm. You know, and all over the place, not just in any one city or one building or even one company. I mean, we could talk about it on the other shows. I mean, you know, we're at a point now where we got a comment on the Twitter when we were talking about the All Japan show that it was like, it's sad that these numbers are considered good.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a bit right now, because we've actually made a comment on that on the other show before.
Yeah.
We've had this big DDT show on Sunday where Chris Brooks won the title. We're going to talk about that a bit in the end as well here on this show. That did a very good house for DDT, specifically considering their circumstances in the last couple of months where their Hurricane Hall shows were in the 600s or in the 700s, and they did 3,465 fans in Sumo Hall, which had a great crowd on hand. Everybody was in for the show. You could really see that the DDT fans really gathered to celebrate this show, and they all expected Chris Brooks to walk away with the championship in the end, and everybody was super positive about that show. And then you got these All Japan shows that do 900 around 900 fans both shows. I've said it on the last show, the Dragon Gate show for King of Gate in Osaka also did 711 fans. They had a show in May that did better than that. But that's roughly around what companies do in Osaka, Eden Arena number 2 right now. And it's just, we've said it, it's the state of the scene after the COVID restrictions. The restrictions were really bad. Not only did they drive away fan interest, they also hurt the companies pretty roughly financially, that they are really not able to invest a lot of money into getting attention, into like advertisements or whatever you need to get fan interest up if you're not New Japan Pro Wrestling Stardom and to a degree Pro Wrestling Noah, that obviously has a lot of money behind them from Cyber Agent and what's it called, the TV service,
Abima,
yes, right. Those are the companies that get a lot of attention, but All Japan Pro Wrestling has actually been quite successful this year. Somebody commented on the tweet that I made on the Eastern Larry Twitter about the All Japan attendances and said that they are roughly around the same line as the Stardom average attendances this year. So while we are at a really low level for pro wrestling in Japan, you still have to like call out these companies that in this time right now do as well as they probably can.
And that's true and all. I still will contend that that does feel like a like they've used the pandemic as more of a crutch when you see all of the other forms of entertainment. I mean, baseball, no problem getting back to where they were. Just like in the middle of the pandemic when everyone was going crazy, they sold out the Dome legit
I know,
fight. And you may know, but you know, I think people will not acknowledge these things because the fact of the matter is, New Japan drove off their fans with their product.
Absolutely. And that's on the companies, absolutely. New Japan, the product, I mean, you can just go back and listen to our shows at the beginning of 2021, I think it was, when I basically gave up on New Japan because it was just such a hard watch with all the heel stuff they did in the main events was so bad, and all the repetitive matches they put on, these dome shows with 6,000 fans in attendance, just looked like this company was on death's bed. And that's definitely a big issue. That's what I was trying to say with that the companies themselves were in a rough shape. They didn't do well for themselves. The one company that actually grew their business during the time in the pandemic with putting up actually a good product was Stardom.
Exactly. And that shows you that, like I said, I think the pandemic is more like, I've always said that feels more like an excuse to these companies for their poor performance. If they had done better like Stardom did, they wouldn't have faced all of these issues. But because they ran off their own fans with stuff nobody wants to see, like Evil and Finley in the main event on night 6, maybe things wouldn't have happened how they did. But unfortunately, we can't go back. You know, we can't change how things happened. It's not just New Japan. I mean, All Japan was doing some really bad stuff last year. DDT, you didn't even want to talk about Peter Pan until I brought it up last week, and you're the biggest DDT fan I know. Maybe not now, but at certain points.
Points, definitely. But this first half year,
It was bad.
Lost interest. Yeah,
it was bad. Like,
except for the King of DDT was really bad.
Yeah, that tournament was good. I mean, even last year, it's like, you know, everyone would point to Higuchi, but then mm-hmm. what about the rest of the card?
Yeah.
You know, like that we're talking about a year and a half of stuff, and hopefully we'll talk about Peter Pan. Hopefully this is a sign that they can turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
All Japan, I mean, right now, I think are doing a lot of good things. Even Noah, we were listen to us on the last episode talking about N1. Seems like there's going to be some cool stuff there. And like, hopefully, and the thing is, though, if they start doing New Japan, almost unanimously, not unanimously, but by a wide margin, won our Promotion of the Year award at mm-hmm. the half year. They have had a good year so far. The problem is, things don't just magically change right away. You know, it's like, not, even if you start doing good, you can't just say, oh, well, we're good again, everybody can come back. The fans aren't going to buy into you that fast. And I think now we're seeing this tournament is starting to drag on people. I mean, this show, Night 5 we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
This was a good show we liked.
Yeah.
And we're going to explain our reasoning in a second. This show did 1,000 fans less than what they did in New Japan Cup.
Yep.
Granted, it was for the final. But that's still a massive drop-off at the end
that's
of the day.
It's a massive drop-off, and you got the hometown boy in the main event.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about all of that in a second. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we'll talk about him in a second, but the fact of the matter is, there's still some struggles and some kinks we have to work out in general, and I think we have to be accepting. And because I think, you know, going on and on about the pandemic being a bad thing, it's true. I'm not saying it had no effect at all. But if they had done better, and if they still, and that's the problem where I've got them going with this. The work is not yet done, even if they've done good so far.
No.
They still have a long way to go to try to get fans back and do different things. And, you know, we'll talk about who we just mentioned a second ago. Maybe that's not the right idea.
I've pointed to it with Dragon Gate on the last show that their attendances throughout the King of Gate are really up. The tournament itself, I've listened to you talk about it on Dramatic Dream Dragons. The tournament itself was all right until now. I think it's heating up now with the semifinals set. So we had a show in Kobe where Big Boss Shimizu defeated Susumu Mochizuki to advance, while Madoka Kikuta beat Shuji Kondo. And those two are going to meet in the first semifinal on August 3, while Kota Minura beat Yuki Yoshioka, and he's going to face the winner of Dragon Dire versus Hio. And for the second day in Gifu, granted, they also had three people from this prefecture as the hometown heroes, so to speak, and they sold the place out with almost 600 fans. So Dragon Gate, while also one of your points is they didn't really, they didn't do anything after Kobe World to really do anything with the storylines they have there because all the people left. Still, though, attendances for the King of Gate have been good, and I'm really looking at the August 3 show for them to set up a big angle, probably with maybe the idea that I had coming off of these shows was that Luis Mesa returns on this Currican Hall show, where maybe Hio is thrown out of Zebrats and then makes the save for him, and they set up a new unit with him and Hio. That will make sense.
Yeah, great idea. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so I'm not sure yet who else would be in line to join them. There is this, I think the guy is called Nishikawa, who is still in Mexico right now. That's obviously someone who's been talked about. There are some others that are freelance in the Dragon Gate, on the Dragon Gate roster right now, like Dragon Kid, for example. I expect some shakeups in Natural Vibes probably coming up. UT got his first win recently in a long, long time after being pinned a lot, while Jackie Funky Karma is still lost.
Why do you pinned, do my boy like this?
He pinned Tommy Naga, at least. That's something. Yeah, what it is. But what do you think about the semifinals? Minura versus Daya or Hio, and Kikuta and Shimizu.
Oh, it's I think what a lot of people expected.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Yoshioka might get the win because I think it sets up a natural story for Daya to advance. But hey, Minura, they've leaned on him before. He's somebody that I was questioning if they would go all the way with, just because would you want him to lose in another big spot again? But in reality, I don't think it's that big of a deal. If you're gonna, I think Shimizu's the favorite to win.
Yeah. But
Minora definitely can possibly win, and I still wouldn't write off Daya either if they want
to. Exactly. There's really two ways to go. I think we all agree that Madoka Higuta is not going to win the King of Gate, which would make no sense. Yes. So Shimizu is going to beat him in his quest to show the Reiwa Six that he would also belong to the top guys in Dragon Gate. While they could do Big Boss Shimizu versus Kota Minura, of course, I'm more looking towards Big Boss Shimizu versus Dragon Daya in the finals, which would then be an automatic setup for the eventual title match. So Big Boss Shimizu has beaten one part of D-Courage and then goes for the other one.
Yeah, I mean, that to me makes a lot of sense. And I think Daya just getting to the finals is a big step up from him.
Absolutely.
Because they haven't really done anything with him, unfortunately. You know, even though I think he's a really talented guy. So they haven't really done a lot with him lately. Give him a little bit of a boost, give him something to hang his hat on. And I move forward with Shimizu versus Kikuta, which could be a great match with all things considered. And I do have to say, I feel I don't like it that they haven't been able to follow up the cage match, just because the cage match was such an emotional and well done thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you remember, go back to June. I mean, things weren't exactly popping in Dragon Gate. Like, but before, even before Kobe World happened. So they've got this second chance.
Very generously put of you, Dylan.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. So, you know, you see this great main event. And I think the buzz off of that match alone, even more than the own show, like, led to a lot of interest to see what was going to happen next.
Yeah.
And they haven't quite given us that. But what they have given us is a pretty decent tournament. I mean, it's all chalk. You know, like, there are no real surprises. I guess you could say Kakuta making it this far may be a little bit of a surprise. But it's not.
Still, he's the champ, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The champ, like, to win.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not really, it's pretty much an all chalk tournament right now. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, like, it all makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Just give us something logical, good wrestling. I mean, there's not any match of the year candidates or anything, but it's all good wrestling. You know, a good tournament, good finalists. You've got some interesting paths you could go now. You've set up, just like you mentioned. And, you know, they're already building to this big Korakuen show. And you got to remember, the thing that about DG, in comparison to a New Japan, for example, they're not located in Tokyo. You know, their home base is in Kobe. So for them to go to Tokyo is a bigger deal than a New Japan or something like that. And so to see them go there, like you said, I love your idea of the angle. I think we all expect Diamante to have his own faction one way or the other coming out of this. Hyo is the perfect person to join him for all sorts of reasons in real life. And just Hyo needs a refresh anyway. So it makes perfect sense.
I was just going to say, I think this is a lost opportunity for our half-year show as well, because I think that he also is one of the most underrated guys right now, because not only has he an incredible body shape right now, he's in perfect physical condition, he also is pretty good in the ring.
Hyo?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really feel that way, to be honest. I mean, I thought his match with UT really dragged and everything. I didn't think he had a great performance.
But the one with KZ was pretty good.
It was okay. But with KZ, you expect really good, I would say. Like, to me, Hyo
was a real small show.
If you were looking at the roster, Hyo would not be... He would be in the bottom tier, like, clearly to me, I would say. Just if you look at the Dragon Gate roster, if we were to rank all of the wrestlers...
I mean, sure, but the guy definitely has improved from where he was a couple of years ago.
If anything, he's worse to me. I hate him. Like, honestly, no, I think he's one of the worst wrestlers. I thought his title reign last year sucked so much. The thing is, his gimmick is bad. So, you know,
yeah.
He's kind of like the new Kotaka, almost, to me, is kind of how I look at him. Like this, you know,
heel. Let's take a look at what he's able to do when he turns face.
And I'll give him that.
I think there's a lot of potential with this guy.
And you may be right at the end of the day. I'll give him that. I'll give you that on that. But I do, like I said, his gimmick is kind of a Weasley heel. It's not even a half.
Sure.
Ultimately. Yeah. So we'll see. Like, we'll see how that plays out. He'll have a chance. He'll be motivated with his friend, Diamante, in there. I like that, you know, you got, like you said, there's some guys floating right now. Yamato is another guy that's been out of the loop on the units. DK, you mentioned. You got a lot of young guys. I mean, Ryu Tanaka looks like a great
Yoshiki Kato is back as well.
Yeah, back from injury, and I mean they got Nagano back too. He's like their rookies have been injured for a little while too, and they were one of the best parts of the promotion to me. Like this year, seeing these guys grow and do great things. Let's see what these guys got. Like put a young guy in there, that group, get a veteran in there. Now you've got a four guy faction. You're rolling now with Diamante.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe bring somebody back from Mexico.
I was just going to say, this Nishikawa guy, he's still in Mexico. They sent him there without even debuting in Japan. And I'm thinking that he may be back to make his official Dragon Gate debut.
Good. See, look at that. See, now you've got a new angle. I mean, it's going to be weird because Shun's going to leave. But, you know, it's fine. Like, they can work
it out. That would be the exact right moment to do an angle where he maybe snaps and kicks out Hiro, for example, and the others just dumbfounded and just don't know what to do.
And then it's just Kai and Ishin hanging out.
they don't like each other, and they say, nah, maybe we'll just do something else.
And I kind of brought this up on the other show when we were talking about this. Zebrats, yeah, things have kind of gone down. Like, they're not that great right now, outside of Shun. But they're almost a necessary evil because if they break up, who's the heel faction in DG right now?
Well, I mean, Gold Class is kind of in the middle, right? You could do more heel stuff with Gold Class for the time being without a true heel faction.
Yeah, I guess so. I just think they're so popular, like, you know, with Ben K's great charisma.
Yep.
You know, and stuff like that.
He's very delusional as well, much like Minoru.
that is true as well. I guess you're right. You're right, ultimately. We'll see how it plays out, but I'm looking forward. I mean, they announced that DK is going to that Junior Festival along with Shun as well, so they're getting some big props right now, doing some good things. Dragon, I've always said, they had a rocky period around the time Shima left and Shingo and all of that. And T-Hawk and Lindemann. But for the most part, if you look at their history, they've got among the most loyal audience of fans in Japanese wrestling. If you look at the fans they have, ups and downs, ebbs and flows, all throughout their time around them in Japan in terms of the promotions, their fans have always stayed and rocked with them. And I think that that's a sign that they have. They're kind of like I don't know how to say this because I was talking to somebody in Japan recently that was at their Kobe World show. Mm-hmm. And basically how I wanted to say it, I mean, it's true, and we're seeing it more even in Americans, or not American, but English speaking sense overall among the fans, where if you're a fan of DG, you're a fan of DG. You're not necessarily a fan of New Japan or Noah or any of these other companies. And I think that's really becoming emphasized throughout their history. As much as, I mean, a lot of companies are like that, but them especially, I think the fans are really in their world of DG, and they love DG, and there's nothing wrong with that, obviously, but they are very loyal. In fact, it's a good thing, because they're very loyal, and I think that they've shown that once again. Like I said, they came off a really cold month of June. It wasn't well-received. They had a great main event. They still showed up for the biggest show of the year, and now look at these tournament shows, where some of them are smaller shows, but they're doing the best they can, and definitely doesn't feel like any kind of drop off. And their product as well. They didn't drive their fans off in the pandemic.
No,
they actually had a lot of.
They actually, when you listen to what Jace says, they actually lost a lot of fans, but that also has to do with the structure of the DG audience, where it's lots of young girls that grow older and then leave their wrestling fandom behind.
That's true.
So they're in this constant cycle of trying to attract new fans, and that's always been part of the business.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you look at their, you know, the way they market their wrestlers. You know, that's an absolutely fair point as well. Not dissimilar from, you know, I mean, they don't really do this anymore, but back in the like the 80s and 90s, the Joshi fans were always looking for those like teenage girls type of fans as well. And then they moved away from that and things eventually collapsed entirely. So I don't think that'll happen with DG, though. They have taken some hits. Like, it's not where it was. And you also have to remember kind of the point I made last episode. The economy as a whole is not good right now either.
Yeah,
and I think that's and even with all the other companies that they did drive their fans away, I don't feel like DG drove their fans away per se. I just think that with everything going on. But we're seeing them bounce back, at least. I would say better than other companies.
Then before we go to the G1, Dylan, let's talk about this DDT show a bit, because the fan interest in DDT is actually quite similar. When you talk about the core DDT audience, they are DDT fans. Yep. More than they are wrestling fans per se. Of course, there are those that go to a lot of different shows in Japan as well, like, for example, Michelle, who's been on the Year End Awards last year with us. She's a big wrestling fan and goes to everything, but there's a lot of fans that are core DDT fans, and a lot of them gathered around in Sumo Hall to witness Chris Brooks win the KOD Openweight title. I think a very emotional moment for a lot of DDT fans that have followed his journey, and his example really is also an example that we've seen in Dragon Gate with a Diamante, or you can even point to New Japan Pro Wrestling with a Zack Sabre Jr., who also stuck around during the pandemic. All of these wrestlers that didn't leave Japan in 2020, but stayed there and wrestled throughout the pandemic, have become not only a core part of the roster where they are located, but also just part of the family, or like Chris Brooks put it in a speech after the main event, they became part of the team, in this case, the Dramatic Dream Team. And this guy came to Japan 2019. He was the first DDT Universal Champion at a point where they still thought about this title to be like an international title for DDT. Obviously, pandemic crossed out their plans in a way, but also just not being pandemic not being an excuse here, because they've pretty much driven away from this idea of an international title without the pandemic as well. But he became Iron Man Heavy Metal Champion, Extreme Champion, KOD Tag Team Champion with Masahiro Takanashi. He is also the SPW Southeast Asia Tag Team Champion with Masahiro Takanashi as the Calamari Drunken Kings. He has become one of the integral parts of DDT, has won the King of DDT this year in very, very good fashion in this match with Ikiguchi. We've talked about that on the last show as well. And now he's had the match with Yuji Hino that I thought was a good match in the main event. He brought out a lot of things that his elders, so to speak, in DDT have done. For example, the diving double knee drop that was the finish for Kudo for a long time. And
yep.
Brooks, obviously being a big, big DDT fan for a long, long time, looked up to guys like Harashima or Kudo. And now he, growing up as a fan, has become the champion of DDT, which is just an amazing story.
Absolutely. I think that you look at his run. I mean, this is a thing they needed. Again, to say, like, the pandemic obviously had effect on everything, but I think companies handled it poorly up and down with something like that. And that DDT is definitely near the top of that list, I would say. But this, we saw here, they did a good number by their standards for sure right now, and they showed improvement, and I think a lot of it was built off of Brooks going for the main event title here. And he's a guy, I kind of mentioned it when we were talking about it, he had that one big match versus Higuchi, you know, which everybody loved and was a great moment. And like one of the better moments, let alone a match, but a great match on top of it with Higuchi. But he really didn't get to do a lot otherwise in the first half of the year. He's a guy, to me, now that he's got the championship, if you look at the back half of this year, much like, I mean, they kind of did this with Higuchi last year, and it really didn't work at all, unfortunately. But he's got a chance now. If they do better numbers up and down, and they show growth, and they recover a little bit from where they've been lately, he's a guy, to me, that could put on an MVP type of run. If you look at the way things are laid out right now for him, they've set the stage perfectly for him. They've set the stage for him to have big matches. They've set this, I mean, they already teased it with Irie right here. That's going to be a great match.
Yes, Irie appeared in the ring claiming that he has a shot at the KOD title because he won WXW's 16-karat gold wearing a WXW shirt. I love everything about this. Irie is the greatest guy.
Exactly. So, you know, they're on a good path right now with that. I mean, this show was one of their best shows they've had.
Yes.
That I can remember, honestly, because like I said, people may, if they tuned in this year, if there are new listeners this year, you know, since when I cage match or whatever, they might not know this, but you used to be a big DDT fan. And there was plenty of times where we'd watch shows and I'd be like, I don't want to watch this. But I mean, I did it for the show, of course, and I gave my best.
And you are now part of a show that is focused on DDT.
Somewhat, but I'm still back off of that as much as possible. Dragon Gate, yes. DDT, no. But that's it is what it is on that end. But regardless of that, though, I really have not been a fan of their promotion forever, really, I would say. Maybe back a long time ago, 15 years ago when I first started, when it was new to me. But for the most part, I'm not a DDT fan. I will admit that, just stylistically. But I think even among their fans, they've lost a lot of their soul lately in the last while. And like I said, I think these problems were there last year, but Higuchi covered it up to English-speaking fans a lot. And, now you see this. They've really gone down this year to everybody, pretty much. But now you see a show like this, and it shows you. And I said this. I don't even remember what I was talking about, but I mentioned about something else, and I was saying, look, in Japanese wrestling, a company could turn things around really fast. I mean, you've seen things. I mean, look at New Japan. They were dire for so long, and then suddenly they make a few changes. I remember us going into Wrestle Kingdom this year, and we weren't that excited going into it. It wasn't like we were fired up over it or anything like that. And then the year went along. Within 6 months, now we're really hyped. Now they're the promotion of the year. So if you do things right now, and like I said, look at this title run with Brooks. Let's say this goes well, and we see improvements, we see great matches, we see some of the soul get put back into this company, which I think he is the perfect person to do that. I think he represents DDT more than anybody else, right now, for them and for the fans, clearly. I mean, this show kind of proved that. If you could get all of that done, and maybe by the start of next year we'll be saying, hey, DDT's turned a corner a little bit. It looks like things are getting better. And I think he is the perfect person to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your favorite match on the show, by the way?
Oh, Takeshita Ueno.
Yeah, with a big margin, I would say. I was pretty surprised that that the other matches did better on Cage Match. The main event probably has the emotional attachment to it with an 8.56. Desperado versus Daisuke Sasaki, I thought, was a good match, but it was built much more on near falls than anything else. It has a rating of 8.45, while Takeshita and Yuki Ueno has an 8.22 rating. I thought that Yuki Ueno, for the first time in a long time, really showed what we've seen in him in his great first campaign, like 2 years ago, or when was it? Where really made a first impression on a lot of people. I thought that he showed a lot of fire in this match, even though he was beaten down pretty significantly by Takeshita. Takeshita really dominated the match to the part that he put him away with his grueling brainbuster and these hard elbow smashes and lariats that he threw at him. Still thought that Ueno looked good in this role, because something that we've also said about Shoto Omino and Zanada and others in this G1 tournament that we're talking about in a bit, Yuki Ueno, he wrestled always good, but there was the spark missing with him. He has very few edges. This guy does a lot of moves. He's very good in the ring, like I said. He looks good, but there's sometimes this fire missing. I've seen that with the Hub match that I recommended recently from the July 2nd show, and I've seen it here, that this guy really has it when you put him against a guy that he can be a foil for. Like Takeshita, he was a great foil for babyface fire energy Yuki Ueno, even though he lost in the end.
Yeah, I think that Takeshita coming in as his heel self made this match, because they had a couple of matches earlier this year which were good because they're great wrestlers, but didn't really make any kind of impression or mark ultimately. And I think with something like this stood out way more, because now you have a heel Takeshita bring this out of him, and he brought it out himself. We have to give Ueno credit for showing that fire. I've always loved his wrestling game, but it's clear he's another one of these guys. If you look at him the last year and a half, he has been way on the down burner right now with them. He's been on the downside. He hasn't been doing great things, and he just hasn't been that interesting ultimately. So we have to give him a credit for bringing out this side of himself on a bigger stage for him. I mean, it wasn't a main event match. It was like a 12-minute mid-card match, but still, it was, to me, the best match of the show, And I think a lot of people would agree with that. A lot of fire between them. And hopefully it leads to something more for Ueno. And hopefully we can get see this continue. And they're kind of continuing along with Takeshita in the six-man match with him and Sasaki and Kanon versus Sana Kamina. So, you know, you see this. And hopefully it brings something out of him. Because I really respect his talent overall. And I thought Takeshita was just, like, super fantastic in this match. And as we already know, he is, ultimately. And he's another one. I think losing him had a big effect on DDT recently.
Yeah, he was
as well.
One of their main draws. They always went back to him when they needed a big attendance.
Yep, absolutely. And even just on the smaller shows. I mean, we've talked about that years ago. I remember when they did the whole deal with Irie as champion. Mm-hmm. Sami Callihan, Mako, Mako Satomura as champion, Dino versus Sasaki, Peter Pan main event. I remember all this stuff right now. And I remember because people used to say Takeshita was boring and wasn't over with the DDT fans. But if you look at
not true.
Yeah, well, that's proven obviously now. It's not been true, but I was always saying it. So I'm a OG Takeshita defender overall. But yeah, he's great. I love the heel stuff. I was really skeptical of them turning him heel in the first place, but I was wrong. You know, he's an excellent, excellent performer as a heel or babyface, as we knew already. And I think he proved it once again here in a different environment. And I thought that was a great match. I think a lot of the matches were interesting to watch. You know, the Desperado and main event. The main event, obviously, like you said, that's got the emotional impact.
Yeah.
So that's going to get a little bit of a bump. I always try to look for reasons behind some of these cage match ratings. Because, you know, a lot of people will just complain about ratings and things like that. But I try to look at the reasoning behind them. Because I've always said, you know, I'm the number one person that says this. The fans don't have to be unbiased at the end of the day.
No.
There's no reason if you have an emotional attachment to Brooks winning that you can't rate that match a 10. There's no reason. And I think with Desperado Sasaki, Desperado is so popular that his matches are going to get a bump from maybe if you try to just view them as matches. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and it's not just him. There's plenty of people like that. I mean, there's people in New Japan. I mean, Kingston, like, you can look at that. His matches are getting rated very highly on Cage Match. And, you know, we'll talk about them in a little bit. But if you have an attachment to somebody and you're a fan, a true fan, those matches are going to be raised that, you know, the bar is going to be raised that much more. With Ueno, I don't think he has that many passionate fans, unfortunately, that are willing to ride for him. So I don't think that really grabbed people.
Yeah, but that's been part of my point, because the emotional attachment is missing because the guy is using very few emotions in his matches.
Yeah.
How will you get the fans behind you in an emotional standpoint when you just lack this part of this integral part of wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Like, what you said was totally true at the end of the day. But I do think this match was really strong.
Yeah.
However, I would put that
up there. We can see it in the ratings for this match, for example. Like, there is one user, Black Mass with Love, saying, "I don't have to, but I will write this. Chris Brooks is all about love and respect for DDT." And he finishes with, "Aftermatch ceremony was extremely emotional and heartwarming. Congratulations to Chris." That's a very reasonable rating, because you're just behind this guy's story. And if you're behind this guy's story, this probably was one of the matches you most enjoyed this year.
Absolutely. And if you look at it as a moment, I think this would be up there.
Yeah. Again, like, and I want to say, while Hino's title reign wasn't good, I thought he was very good in this match. I thought he was a great roadblock for Chris Brooks. Everything that Brooks tried basically didn't work with Yuji Hino. He kicked out numerous times out of all the moves that Brooks threw at him. It, in the end, needed another praying mantis bomb to put Hino away. I think this was one of his strongest performances as champion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the match he won it in was great.
Mm-hmm.
Him versus Higuchi, the chop match.
Yeah.
And this match was also very strong. So I think he booked ended it well. It's just the 6 months in between that was bad, ultimately. And the thing is, his issues as champion were never about his in-ring talents. At the end of the day, like, he is a great wrestler. I think we can all, we may forget that sometimes, or some people may forget that, but he is a great performer. Has always been. Back to the K-Dojo days. You know, 0-1 champion. And now in DDT, he was just the wrong person for the role. And I always say this, not everybody needs to be world champion. That doesn't take away from them as wrestlers. like to me. I think people will take that negatively and think that I'm criticizing them. But not everybody is meant to be the champion. Like, that doesn't take away them from them as wrestlers. And he is
the champion. In some cases, it will actually boost the importance of a championship when there's just this great wrestler that is just not able to win the title.
And yeah, absolutely, as well. I mean, you know, maybe they have just something missing, you know, like that doesn't make them a good fit. And in this company as well, I think especially he was not as good a fit as a champion. But, you know, you can point to a lot of different things overall, but nothing about his in-ring work can be criticized because he's a great performer. And we saw it here again with Brooks. Like you said, a great roadblock, kind of, you know, taking the same roadblock tactic that Higuchi did in the KOD final. But it worked. I mean, that was a match, and this was a really strong match, a perfect match for Brooks to win and overcome him. And I think it actually works, even though I don't think his reign was good. I think the fact that it was actually bad and not what DDT fans want actually makes Brooks' win that much more vital, because now he is what, like, he does represent DDT.
And I do think that the match with Iriya has some similar stakes to it, with Iriya being not as tall, obviously, as Hino and Higuchi, but still a pretty good unit to fight against. Good powerhouse, and Brooks will be very good in this one as well, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited about his title reign. I think he could be a sleeper case. I don't know how many people would think. Mm-hmm. I think he could be an MVP candidate by the end of the year. Right. I think so well.
I mean, obviously, Drew, one of the better houses for DDT in a long, long time.
Yeah, the best.
Yep. Some more talking points. I was talking about units, and I've noticed in recent weeks, where I also watched the Road to Peter Pan shows, that the younger guys on the roster, like Toei Kojima or Yuya Kuroku, they've really bulked up. And they've become little units themselves. And I really like this approach, that there is different types of wrestlers on the DDT roster. When you look at all the young talent that they have with Kojima and Okoroku, obviously, they are getting much bigger. But then there is also in Harimao that had this great KOD six-man tag team title match with Eruption on the show. There is Yuki Ishida, and on the other side, there's Hideki Okatani. Okatani has fallen a bit since his great rookie days 1 or 2 years ago, while Yuki Ishida really impressed me recently. And then there's also, of course, Takeshi Masada and Katsuma Sumi in the opener that then again have completely different body types from Toei Kojima and Yuya Kuroku. So the DDT roster becomes more balanced with more different wrestlers you can really be attached to.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully some of these rookies can get bigger positions. Obviously, you had Ishida and Hari Mao, and now Okatani. I thought the six-man title match was really well done, too, on this show. Obviously, like, the emotional aspect of it is Akai getting her title after all this time and on her retirement road, so that was good. You had all the emotions with Higuchi facing his former faction. I was surprised they didn't go longer, actually, but I thought for what they did was really well done. You know, you have to really like what they did there. Great moment for Okatani, too. Like, it felt like he had a new life after getting the title.
Yep.
And, you know, the guys you mentioned, like Masada, will one day be the future of this company at the end of the day. He's already the future. He will be the president one day. You know, he's going to be the next kind of guy they model after a Takeshita.
Reminded me a lot of heel Takeshita, actually, with his black leather jacket coming out. He was kind of going for a mixed version of Takeshita and Sasaki there. And that could also lead into a direction, because after the show, it looks like that Takeshita might be joining Damnation TA, or at least like being an affiliate.
Yeah, he said he wasn't. He says, I'll never join them, but I hate Sonic Club now.
Yeah, so okay.
I hate you so much that I'm going to team with Damnation. Like, was kind of his point. So I don't think he's going to be around DDT for very long, to be honest, but we'll see what he can do. I mean, you think if they were smart, build to that title match with him versus Brooks would have to mean something. But the thing is, maybe they can't do that, ultimately, considering the other one. Yeah. Unless they want to put the title on him overall. But that's the thing. I don't think he's going to be a main player for DDT for very long, but they're getting as much as they can out of him now, which I think is admirable.
Yep. They are going to Curricon Hall next week with a card that they have announced. I'm just looking it up as we speak. So the KOD Openweight title match that we mentioned is going to happen on September 9, but they do have a Curricon Hall show coming up next weekend on Sunday, actually. Summer Vacation 2023. I think they have Takeshita is still on that show. Quickly translating that card they announced. For the, it looks like to be a special six-man tag in the main event with Takeshita, Daisuke Sasaki, and Cannon against Yuki Ueno, Mao, and Toi Kojima. So the, what you mentioned, Damnation TA assisted by Takeshita against Sona Kamina. DDT Extreme title, Katsuki Hirata defense against Harashima. And a Yuki Sakaguchi 50th anniversary special tag match. Yuki Sakaguchi, Saki Akai, and Hideki Ukatani against Shuji Ishikawa, Tanumasaku Toba, and Masahiro Takanashi with some more action. On the other card, the new champion, Chris Brooks, teams with Antonio Honda and Takeshi Masada against Katsusada Eguchi, Kotaro Suzuki, and Yuki Ishida. So that's next weekend for DDT. Yeah, turning our attention now, Dylan, to the two tournaments. G1 Climax first. We mentioned it at the beginning of the show. The show on Saturday from Nagaoka was the best show of the tournament so far, with a lot of good action, really top to bottom, I thought. Yoshihashi looked very good in the opener. Tangaloa somewhat bounced back from his horrendous first match with Kenta. I thought that his performances, this second and third performance was better at least than that. Still though, there is a lot to be desired with him. He's just a dude in the tournament. While Yoshihashi really carries himself like a proper G1 participant right now, which makes me really happy. Then we had Gabe Kidd and Renarita. Renarita was the first one. I said it on the last show. Yep. He was the first one to notice that, hey, the guy is behind me. And yeah, he was the smart one. But then still fell to Gabe Kidd, who scored the pinfall over him. That's the thing in these tournament matches, especially in Block A. These guys have to trade points because they are not beating Zanada or Kaito Kiyomiya, and they somehow have to gather points. So Gabe Kidd here beat Renarita in 10 minutes. Good stuff. Great Khan and El Fantasma was okay. Both guys are really, yeah, they're not blowing anything away.
I will say that, I mean, just to kind of catch up on it, like here, you know, Yoshihashi Loa, like you said, the thing I like about Loa is that every match he's improved, which, you know, like I said, kind of plays to my point before about ring rust. Hashi, to me, is one of the best workers in any of the blocks, to me, and he continues to prove that. Kid and Narita, totally thought of you when that happened, when he did that, he finally got in there. Well, you know, I'll have bigger points about the Narita, Umino, and Tsuji trio after the show. But like you said, a solid match, like nothing wrong with it. Okan and Fantasmo, totally agree with you, but I will say this, I wanted to bring this up. Fantasmo did cut a really good promo backstage, talking about his grandma, his grandparents and stuff on there. And hopefully that gives that emotional weight to him that he can kind of bring forward. And, you know, he's at 0 points right now. And at this point, you know, after three shows, if you're at zero, you might as well be eliminated. You know, like Naito and Okada are not losing three matches in a row. At the end, like we all know that. So now you're at the point where you're just trying to prove yourself, which is kind of
that you belong, really. And that's
yeah.
That's something that can at least be a story for El Fantasmo going in this tournament that, like you said, gets some fans behind him.
Absolutely, Okan. I don't know what's going on with him, like, but you know, he is definitely a guy.
Yeah, he is a guy. Yeah.
Oh, now we get the main event coming up next, too.
Ooh, yeah, let's see about that. Yeah, and when we had, this was the case here, too, with Block A. Chase Owens somehow had to get some points. He got his second win over Hikuleo, who also is 0-3, much like Fantasmo, now has to prove that he actually belongs in this tournament. I
won't do that.
Don't know where he's going to pick up his points, though. Let's see who he's facing next. He's facing Narita. Yeah, okay, he can beat Narita. Sure, why not?
The thing is, he's big. He can beat anybody.
Yeah.
Sure. Honestly, like, but the thing is, he's so bad is the problem. And I mean, this match was talked about. I was surprised to see it hated as much as it is, because
me too. I thought it was like a totally decent match, actually.
I wouldn't go that far, but I will say that I will say that I thought, because people were talking about this, like it was the worst match of all time.
Yeah.
And I mean, the finish was bad. I like the knee strike was really weak. And like Chase, to me, I look at him as like the ultimate 5 out of 10 wrestler. Like he's kind of like a creator wrestler. Even his moveset is like, oh, I like Kenny Omega, so I'm going to do his V trigger, but I'm going to call it the C trigger here. Hikuleo is just an awful performer, like a truly one of the worst wrestlers on the roster to me. And I think there's no good to come from this, but it wasn't, to me, it was like a 1-star match, not like a minus five that everyone was talking about it.
When I look at Chase Owens matches that I've seen in recent weeks and months, I actually rated at the higher level of his performances. The match, the one with Gabe Kidd was atrocious with the brawl. The one with Kaito was okay. This one also okay. I mean, I wasn't as negative on it as a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you see, this was the lowest rated match of the tournament.
Yeah.
On Cage Match. But I mean, like I said, people were talking about it, like it was the worst match of all time. I mean,
yeah. And they forget that we had Kenta and Tangaloa, which was way worse.
And I was saying, look up Chase and Yano if you want to see the worst match. Like, to watch that match and tell me this match was the worst of all time. I'm not as high on it as you, but I will say that I thought it was just really bad and not the worst of all time. Overall, like, that's all.
What do you think about Kenta's performance against Will Ospreay?
Oh, definitely his best of the tournament so far.
His best in years.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the thing is, though, he still did a lot of the heel shtick at the end that kind of messed up the match for me.
Yeah,
but if you look at the match itself, though, he performed a lot better than he usually does against Ospreay. But I was going to say, too, I said this on the Patreon show I did about this. I wonder if he wasn't motivated a little bit extra by Ospreay versus Marufuji getting announced.
That's an excellent point, actually, yeah.
And yeah, trying to prove a point with this match versus Ospreay that, hey, like, I don't want to get shown up by Marufuji at here. Or maybe he might have been saying, hey, put in a good word for me to be on that show. The word there. Like, we don't know what his thinking was, but I do think that was a factor in why he stepped up here. And Ospreay, obviously, one of the MVPs of the tournament. Again, historically, I'm not his biggest fan, but I think we have to give him credit where it's due. I think he had the match.
Like, he's bumping around for everybody on this tournament.
Yeah, he was a big part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great.
Him and Yoshiashi was a great match, like one of the best of the tournament, I would say. And here, I mean, with Kenta, this is going to go a long way because you're taking a guy who's really struggled throughout the tournament. Like you said, not just in the tournament, for a long, long time now. And you're making him look a lot better than he usually is. So, and I think that really deserves a lot of credit. But Kenta, he also did work harder here and stepped up. I wish they had gone away from the heel stuff at the end. So that kind of takes it down for me as a match. But as a performance, you have to give Kenta his props here. And it makes me happy. I hope we can see more of that in the future. But I don't know.
Yeah. Then we had the second best rated match on the show. And in my opinion, also the second best match of the show. With Kaito Kiyomiya and Shota Umino going to a time limit draw. The second one for Shota Umino. I said one day before the show, said in the cage match Discord, I can't watch Shota Umino wrestle for almost 20 minutes or 20 minutes all the time. But here in this match, I thought about what we said on our last show, and maybe you'll have a different opinion on that. That maybe I thought that what we said on the last show, that he lacked this fire and was just going through the motions, was completely different in this match. I thought that he showed very, very much fire against Kaito Kiyomiya, and he showed that he wanted to prove his place in this tournament, and he also wanted to prove his place within New Japan against the outsider. I thought that Shota Umino looked great in this match with Kiyomiya, and Kiyomiya, he even managed to get the crowd behind Shota Umino without actually being a heel, which is an unknown concept in New Japan. In the last couple of years, Dylan, there is never a heel who can be a subtle heel. He's always going to be like this cheating guy and be in the house of torture and like choke your opponents. But no, Kaito Kiyomiya was just very good in his match, in his role as being the dominant force in this encounter with Umino. And I thought Umino looked good as the underdog here. So I really liked this one. I thought this was one of the better matches of the tournament so far.
I thought the first and second best matches of the tournament were on the show. And this was my favorite. I actually like this. I mean, I'm kind of on the same level of the Taichi and Okada match. I think they're all very, like, very similar level. I like this one a little bit more because I thought the finish was better. Mm-hmm. Even though it went to a draw, they teased it where Umino had the match almost won, and Kaito actually kicked out before the bell. And it was like 2 seconds later he kicked out, and that was it for the time limit draw. I thought this was a really great match, and to me, easily the best of Umino's career. Like best performance, best match, like best singles match, you know, this was awesome. And Kaito deserves a ton of credit for that. Like you said, Umino stepped up big. This felt like a battle between rival aces, almost.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how it felt like, even though neither has really been positioned as that. Umino definitely has it, and Kaito, we obviously have had a long, long amount of talks about Kaito and Noah. But in this match, it really felt that way due to their work, and I think Kaito totally brought the best. These guys have great chemistry, and it's a match I'd love to see run back in the future. I think they have an even better one in them, even though I thought this was a fantastic performance. This, to me, was my favorite match of the tournament so far.
Oh, great stuff, yes. Then maybe Okada versus Taichi is my favorite match of the tournament so far.
That's my second.
I really loved this match. Specifically, one of my talking points also was that Okada is still doing the 10-minute thing in his matches where really nothing happens in the first 8 to 10 minutes. But here, he went for the Rainmaker 2 minutes into the match, and it really was a big sprint after that with them really exchanging all their big moves. And gotta give it to Taichi, his Gamangiri. He's developed that into one of the greatest-looking corner kicks in all of wrestling. Just amazing stuff. I think he held his own against Okada. I get where you're coming from. Shota Umino looked like he had the match won, where I didn't actually think that Taichi would win the match against Okada. They couldn't make me believe that, even though he got some near falls again. Still, though, there was a lot of great fire. This was a proper G1 climax match. I love this.
The crowd believed in Taichi, though. Yeah. Like I said, that's what hurt it. If Taichi had won this, it probably would have been my favorite match of the tournament. But I mean, the finish was really flat with the sit-down pin to me overall.
Then again, Taichi, he countered the Rainmaker so often, and he was really in Okada was really in dire straits, it felt like, so that he had to go back to this sit-down pinfall to have this out. And again, it's great that wrestlers in the tournament have different ways to get their wins.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right about that. I just think because the crowd, like I said, if the crowd wasn't taking to Taichi so much, I don't think I would have felt that way. But I just felt it was flat, considering how, I mean, this fan was going crazy over Taichi here, and he was wrestling so great here. Okada and him had great chemistry. I mean, these guys just had a great match together, and I want to give extra credit because normally I do listen to the Japanese commentary, but I tried to make it an effort to listen to English this time. I thought they did a great job in this match. I mean, they had some great calls. At the end, they were putting over Taichi. They were like, you know, he's like, you can't do anything more than he did, but he still didn't win. You know, he was saying over there, comparing Okada to Mike Tyson with the Rainmaker early on. They were like, how many times have you seen a Mike Tyson fight where he knocks somebody out in 60 seconds? And now he's going for the Rainmaker here. I thought it was a great call overall. And I thought they made this match seem even bigger than it was. And Taichi, a great performance from him. He's been a guy that's had a lot of good stuff in this tournament, I thought. Okada.
Yeah, it's actually been, when we look at the top performers, I think Taichi is on the forefront here.
Yeah,
he had this great match with Ospreay.
Yep.
Decent one with Tangaloa. Yeah.
Yeah, then a great match with Okada, one of the best of the tournament. Like I said, this would be my second favorite match of the tournament. I like the Umino match a little bit better because of the finish, but I think that this is right on that level. If you said it was the best one, I can't criticize you at all. I thought this was a great, great match.
Then we had the main event, Sanada 3-0, going to 6 points, defeating Yota Tsuji. He still has at 1 point. This match went 18:36. Once again, a very long one. 7.92 on Cage Match. What's your take on this?
The people at Cage Match liked it more than me, but I will say that I thought, as a match, this was a little bit better than their Dominion match.
Mm-hmm.
As a performance for Umino, like that match in June was all about putting him
Tsuji, you mean?
Tsuji. Sorry. Yeah. The match in June was all about putting Tsuji over.
Yeah.
And he did a great job, obviously, performs well and all that. I think as a match, Sonata brought more to the table in this one than he did in June.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how much does he have to bring to the table at the end of the day, which I don't think...
I still thought, not to the level of Shota Umino, but Sonata also stepped up from the point that we highly criticized on the match that he had with Shota Umino, where it just looked like he was doing stuff. I thought that there was much more of a sense of urgency to Sonata that was missing in this prior match, where it just was about him proving that he is, in fact, better than Yota Tsuji, because in the title match, Yota Tsuji basically ran him over. And he tried that again, and Sonata had answers to that this time. So I thought that also for his hometown crowd, he performed better and much more engaging.
And yet his hometown crowd rallied behind Tsuji here as well.
Yeah.
I would say. And in fact, Tsuji also does all of his own moves better than him as well. Like
I would kind of disagree with the Dragon Sleeper that looked not as good as it could have.
Well, Sonata's is horrible. So I would say that this wasn't great.
The moonsault was good.
Yeah, the moonsault was great. The sleeper was clearly better than Sonata's, which is like one of the worst finishers to me. Like is the skull end, and Sonata really didn't do a lot for me in this match. To be honest, I thought that he's wrestling a Sonata match, he's leading it. I thought it was pretty good, but I thought, man, the crowd's rallying behind Tsuji here, and I mean Tsuji has to be one of the. Like, he has what it takes. Like, he has something you can't teach at the end of the day. I was really surprised Sonata won here again, actually. I thought Tsuji was going to win for sure.
I was thinking that a lot of people thought that, but I don't think that it's a bad choice to have Tsuji go 0-2 against Sonata at this point, because there will probably be a point where he then gets the victory that has the crowd rallying behind him as the guy that is clearly the bigger and more powerful guy, but still, though, the underdog because he lost twice.
That's true. I just think I don't like Sonata winning. No matter what.
That's a different point.
But I don't think it's the right thing. I already think Tsuji's a bigger star. I think Tsuji means more to this company than Sonata does. Like, every time they wrestle, the crowd rallies behind him. Sonata can't even draw in his hometown. I mean, why is he the champion? It doesn't make any sense to me. I just think he's a terrible, terrible choice. And unfortunately, it's hurting the block because, like I said, this match was not a great match compared to the other two. If you had a champion that was great, that you could rally the Three Musketeers behind, I think that would help them a lot. And unfortunately, they're behind the eight ball to where they have to work against Sonata's lack of charisma and interestingness to make something out of it. And you want them to have a great story with the champion. With Sonata, they did a very similar story to what you just described with Sonata himself versus Okada, which ultimately had a huge payoff in the G1, although nobody remembers it because Sonata sucks so much at the end of the day, and like nobody wants to think about any moments he's had. But that was a big moment. If you remember a few years ago, the crowd went crazy when he finally beat Okada after seven times or whatever. So the thing is, Sonata is just such a poor person to base a block around that I don't think it does Tsuji any good, actually, to wrestle him. I think Tsuji should have won and moved on from all of this.
Thing though is, then if he had, they would be in a terrible position again, because they would have then do another title match.
And they're telling a story with the Musketeers here, and none of them have gotten wins so far, which is an interesting tactic to take, considering that because we had talked about all of the hype they had built into them, just maybe artificially or not, still people talked about them. So now, none of them have gotten wins yet.
Yeah.
What do you make of this?
I don't think it's a bad choice, because we're like Japanese wrestling. Of course, wins matter, but it's not like that Japanese wrestling is solely based around guys winning. We've also had that with the big MMA days in Pride Fighting Championship. it wasn't all about the guys winning. It was much more about their performances. When somebody did well and went down swinging, people got behind them. And I can see the approach with this being in a similar way, because that's the Yoratsuji story, basically, in this tournament. He has all the tools, but he still is not able to transform that into wins for him. His performances are great, and he has all the power and all the great big moves that he needs to, but yeah, he's not able to put it together right now. And that's a great story to follow. With Shota Umino, I think that he showed against Kaito Kiyomiya that he is also just a little bit away from where he thinks he could be, or from where people consider him to be. Whereas Ren Arita, he clearly lags behind the two in the way that his matches seem good, but not that... When I see a Ren Arita match, I don't necessarily expect him to get close to beating Izanada, for example, in this block.
And I agree with that. I agree with all that, actually. I think that, you know, it's not a bad story. I will say, I do think, I mean, you know, the biggest stars were based on wins, ultimately, even in Pride. I mean, like, you know, Sakuraba, the Gracie killer. Like, if he had just lost to the Gracies, he probably wouldn't have been...
And ultimately, they will get their wins, you know? It's not like that these guys will be jobbers and lose all the time.
No.
They will get their wins. But maybe not just yet, maybe.
Yeah, so, Tsuji and Umino, for sure, I'm not convinced on Narita that he's ever going to get... To be honest. Tsuji, they're clearly... Tsuji has what it takes, and Umino, they're going to give as many chances as it takes. Like, similar to Sonata, like, even if he fails over and over, they're just going to push him no matter what, clearly. And Umino, I mean, at this performance was the best of his career, so I can't criticize him too much. Yeah, he hasn't been great shakes, I would say, for the most part up to this point. But still, I think the story's interesting. Like you said, it builds long-term, and it gives them kind of... They've turned, you know, because going into the tournament, obviously, everyone, you know, they brought in the expectations of, you know, Hashimoto, Muto, Chono, legends, and things like that. And now they're kind of going the opposite direction in execution of the tournament. And I think it may be better that way, actually, overall, because now you can build them to do more. And they're in a block where, obviously, Sonata's the champion. Kaito's the outsider. They're going to advance. So... The one thing I don't like about it is that it takes away a lot of drama from this block, ultimately, mm-hmm. where it's so obvious that these two are going to advance, and I think we all kind of figured that anyway, but I do think they could have built to a moment where, hey, so-and-so Tsuji, like, to me, Tsuji's the best of the three right now, as an overall package, but let's say it could be Umino as well, it could be any of them, really. If you built to a match where, hey, if so-and-so wins, he advances, and then the other two come out to support him, mm-hmm. I think you could have created a natural big moment, and I think that they've passed on that chance to tell this story, which, again, I agree with you, was not bad at all. I like what they're doing, actually. Mm-hmm. Umino and Narita both have 2 points based on draws at the end of the day. That's another thing I don't like, is that it was very predictable that all three would draw with each other, but it is what it is right now. I think it's going to be interesting to see how things turn out, but so far, and the thing with Narita, too, we have to mention as well. His matches have both been with the other two and Gabe Kidd.
Yeah.
And I mean, Kidd and Coughlin both are proving that they maybe should not have been in the tournament. I would say, like, yeah. if all things were equal. So I'm not going to completely write off Narita. I just think with his size right now, we kind of brought this up on the last episode too, and you specifically made a great point about it. I think with his size, not an impressive physique, not an impressive look, not an impressive charisma. I like his wrestling a lot, but I think he's going to need to be put in a big match. I want to see how he does versus Sonata and Kaito and things like that. I like to see those matches before we judge, because I think clearly Kaito is going to carry this block. Like, whatever good is going to come out of this block is going to be from him. And he's going to be a guy, he proved it just now against Umino. He can make guys look even better than they are. And I'd like to see Narita versus him before I completely write him off.
It's going to be interesting how their path to Wrestle Kingdom shapes up, because they are not going to advance in the blocks.
Yeah.
And they will tell a story around that, because you'd expect in storyline, in kayfabe, at least one of them to make it to the elimination rounds. But it's going to be interesting how they approach this, because after the tournament, they will clearly all have to compensate for their losses and for their shortcomings in the tournament. And that's going to be an interesting story until January.
Yeah, I hope that they have plans in the future after the tournament for it. And obviously with Tsuji and Umino, they're going to get those chances. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go from there.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned the name already, Alex Kovlin. He was in the opening match on the Nagano show. The show overall rated 5.39, clearly the worst show of the tournament so far. We're really in this on this mid-tour shows right now. Zack Sabre Jr. and Alex Kovlin, they had a match in the opener. It has the same rating as the show, actually, 5.39.
And the thing is, you see a lot of comments. Again, people talked about this like it was this terrible match.
No,
I thought, yeah, it was like, okay. Like, you know, overall, and somebody said this is the worst match of the tournament. And I was like, come on. It wasn't that bad.
Alex Kovlin looked really bad once again. He looked completely out of his game against Zack Sabre's submissions. He didn't have anything.
Yeah, the good thing is when he does his power stuff is really the thing he brings to the table. But yeah, when he tried to do the technical, it was bad overall. Like I said, kind of bringing back our last point that, you know, on the last episode, maybe not everybody needs to be in this tournament.
Tama Tonga versus Mikey Nichols had nothing. Really?
I liked the moonsault into the gun stun. I know this is a controversial spot.
I thought it didn't look good. I thought Tama Tonga was a bit too late.
You're right. Like I said, I thought it was a cool idea, maybe not
execution. The idea was good.
Yeah, exactly.
Better than an execution, actually.
I think Nichols is still wrestling above where I expected him. Maybe it says something about my low expectations. But, you know, because, again, he was somebody right near the bottom of my interest level coming in. So I like this. I think Tonga, I mean, when Tonga took off his top in the match, that was the first time the crowd really got into the into the whole show. I mean, the first match was, like, completely dead. Zack and Coughlin, there was zero heat. And, I mean, most of the show was dead. But I said this before the show to you. We were talking about it off the air. People want to blame the fans. Look at the show they're given. Like, you know, like, what do they have to really rile up for here?
Yeah, definitely not the next match. I mean, Hiroki Goto is apparently injured. We'll have to wait and see how that goes on for him in the tournament. They did a very quick roll-up finish with the Goto Shiki. Was it the Goto Shiki?
Goto
Nishiki. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Nothing to say about that, obviously.
Yeah.
What's your take on the Kingston and Hinare match? I'm interested in that.
It would be good if these guys could actually hit hard. Like, you know, overall.
I love Eddie Kingston. But I'm at this point where it feels like to me that he's just emulating Japanese wrestling.
I said that at the start of the tournament, where that is his worst. Like, if he just would be himself, he's so much better than being a Japanese wrestling fan, like who's actually wrestling overall. That's my issue with him, is that it's clearly not to his strengths. And like I said, what can you do? He's living his dream at the end of the day.
Sure. And I'm happy for him about that, but it's not blowing me away in any kind of form. It's okay. He's doing the stuff with Hinari in this case. It was a decent mid-card match.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine, but like I said, I mean, I thought the finish was really bad because the spinning back fist, he tried to no-sell it, do a headbutt, and then the second back fist really didn't work. Like, it didn't connect. So. Yeah, he's not my favorite in this tournament. Mm.
Tetsuya Naito's entrance was 8 Hiroki Goto versus Shane Haste matches long. They played his music twice. It's a long theme. it was fun. It was inoffensive comedy.
Exactly. I mean, that was the whole point, because then Yano was like, hey, like, stop this. that's the comedy of it. Yano, hey, stop fooling around in this match. Like, come on. And so that's kind of the comedy. Like, the guy who always trolls everybody is now getting trolled.
I also think that 4.93, come on, this was just, it wasn't a bad match. It was just fun.
Oh, there was nothing, like, as a match, it was not any kind of good match. Comedy, entertainment, silliness, but not as a match.
No. 8.0 for Shingo Takagi and Tomohiro Ishii. I think a lot of people gave this a high rating because it's these two guys, but I thought that this was not a good match. This was, for their standards, this was an okay match.
I've always said that even their matches in the past, I think Shingo is one of Ishii's worst opponents, in my opinion. Like, I think he brings out all the... Shingo is what everybody says Ishii is, like, to me. And he's great at what he does, but his style of match is always similar at the end of the day. Ishii always brings different stuff.
I mean, dropkick! This great running dropkick! This looked so amazing!
Yes, that was definitely a highlight. But he always brings different stuff, and he never gets credit for it. And that's why I said in the last episode, we have to give Ishii his props. But ultimately, I do agree that this was not a great match. I wouldn't say it was bad. I would say it was... I mean, the thing is, on this show, it was the best match on the show. Like, I would say pretty easily. I like the next match as well. But this was not anything that's going to be remembered. And this is how I feel about them. Their very first match together, when Shingo was first in the G1, match of the year level. Like, amazing match, everything you want out of these two going at it. And then every subsequent match was the same stuff over and over and over. And it's gotten progressively less interesting as time has gone along. And now we reach this point where the crowd wasn't into it. It wasn't a great match. It was, I would say, a good match, but not a great one. I'd still give it a soft wreck, you know, but a full wreck even. I give it like 3.5, 3.75.
Yeah, probably. You know? But like I said, for their individual, maybe not against each other, but for their individual standards, this was not good.
And there's other people that love all their matches, but I am just not one of them. I don't think they wrestle that great. I think the thing is, they wrestle the same so often that it's desensitized me to them overall. But like you said, individual-wise, these guys are still great. Like, they're going to have great matches against everyone else, probably. But I just, to them, for me, them against each other doesn't do it for me as much as maybe other people.
So, Dylan, if you just were a casual fan going to this show, really not knowing what card order you got on this day, and you're just sitting there and watching the Jeff Cobb and Hiroshi Tanahashi match, wouldn't you also have thought, okay, I'm going home. This was the main event, obviously.
Maybe so. You get the Tanahashi in the main event. Hey, listen, you can't leave when the air ukulele is getting played. Sure. Right now. You know, we're not going to talk about the ukulele spots in this match. Or we're not going to talk bad about them. We're going to talk good about them because it was very amusing at the end of the day.
I think Jeff Cobb is one of the most entertaining performers in this tournament so far.
Oh, me too. I picked him to advance, and I like that he's got this great run to start off. I think he's been
Isn't good for your case, actually, that he's got this great run to start.
Oh, that's true. He could be one. Well, Zach is also undefeated, so somebody's going to have to take a fall here. It's going to be either him or Zach. And Zach's a champion, so I don't know if they want him to advance. So I will ride with my
I don't think that they want to go back to the New Japan TV title program once again.
I mean, how can you disrespect the legacy of the TV title right now? That big block that they've got.
What do you think about the match itself?
It was good. Like, I mean, I didn't think it was like anything special or anything like that. But, you know, 6.67, that seems about right.
That's all right.
To me. Yeah, like I said, and I think that, you know, for everything, I thought Cobb really deserves a lot of credit. Everyone would point to his power stuff that he does, but I thought he really actually sold really well for Tanahashi. Bumped around, tried to make his offense look good. Tanahashi, again, you know, obviously he's had better matches than this in the tournament, but he's been good, actually. I think he's been one of the better performers, honestly. Like, if you look at... He'd be in the top half, let's say that, of the tournament, you know. Maybe not, like, one of the best, but a guy who's been a positive in his block, Tanahashi would be. And like you said, Cobb, to me, is one of the top guys. So I like the match.
Yeah, it was a good performance by both guys. So one of the crucial questions I have on this show, Dylan, are you House of Torture or are you Bullet Club War Dogs? What's your team, Dylan?
Oh, no. I mean, are they finally going to do it? I mean, they've teased this Bullet Club and House
Bullet
of Torture.
Bullet Club Civil War is finally happening in Block C.
Oh, forget the bloodline. This is the top tier storytelling right here. Bullet Club Civil War coming at us. You know,
you gotta be a war dog.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, House of Torture is awful. So you pick anybody over them. You know, like any faction you can name. Like, name any faction you want. Maybe not Voodoo Murders, but besides them. And, I mean, War Dogs, I like Finlay for the most part in his style. I think he's done good in the tournament. Just not this match.
This was awful. This probably was the second worst match of the tournament right after Kenta and Tangaloa.
You hate that match.
I hate that match.
But this was up there. Let's put it that way. We don't want to make grand declarations. We'll wait until the tournament's over. But, I mean, Evil's still got a lot more matches to go, Striga, so we have to keep that in mind.
let's see who Evil still has. That's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who he has. It's all... It's all
Ishii and Evil. Ah, they're going back to that Tokyo Dome performance, obviously.
Yeah.
Evil is still has Nichols.
Okay.
And Shingo.
Well, Nichols' redemption tour is going to continue getting a good match out of Evil here. But that's impossible, no matter who it is. It could be the greatest wrestler alive, and I don't think you can get a good match here.
I'm circling the Ishii match because Ishii is a great wrestler, and they somehow have to detract from that.
And, I mean, Evil in Kingston was also horrible. So, yeah. I mean, all of Evil's matches suck. Like, again, like, all of his matches have been bad. It's not like this was way worse than his other matches.
It's just
in the main event, which makes it...
Mm-hmm. And that's been my point for a couple of months now, that I can't tolerate the House of Torture when they are not in main events.
Why is it better if it's not in the main event?
Because it's nothing that is of any importance.
But if it's in this tournament, it is important because it counts towards the standings.
Yeah, but you know that Evil is going to be one of those guys that end up with a 50-50 record. And
yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right. At the end of the day, I wasn't questioning you.
And
I agree.
It's worse than it's when it's in the main event because that's the last impression you get from a show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, I agree with you. I was just wanted you to expand upon that a little bit on there.
When they are in these six man matches in the mid card, like for example for the Never Open Weight six man tag team title. Or even when they were in the tag team title decision match, their role in these situations is everybody fears that they might win the title and they don't in the end, which is kind of a role that I can accept because it's without any real consequence that they are such a horrendous group. But when it's a main event program, you got to give them something to really explain why they are in the main event program.
And they proved that in the Dominion tag match. I like that, like exactly what you just said there.
Yeah.
Because I thought that like worked really... That was way better than anybody could have anticipated because Bishamon is such a great team, first of all, but also because they utilized them how you said. So I really agree with everything you said. Like I said, I'm okay with undercard shenanigans. Same thing with... I feel the same about Evil as I do about Yano. If we're doing undercard non-important stuff... I'm okay with that. Like, I'm fine with undercard goofiness. And we talked about the DDT show. I mean, look at the mascot match. I thought that was a phenomenal undercard comedy match that has a place on any wrestling show, even outside of DDT. This stuff could work as undercard fodder. In the tournament, that's where I tighten up my expectations a little bit because Yano and Evil are going for the world title in this tournament. And that's kind of been my point before.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds silly to say because we all know, obviously, in real life, that's not going to happen. But in the story of this show that I'm watching and trying to enjoy and watching as a show, they are going for the world title. And that makes this unacceptable. And actually, matches like this make me not want to watch any of this. Because if the referee is doing this in this main event match, in this tournament match, going for the world title, as I said, why does anything matter? At the end of the day, like why couldn't this happen in any match? Other than the thing is, we know in real life other wrestlers are better, so we know it won't happen.
Yeah.
But if you watch it as a show, this is the level of incompetence that we have from the officiating.
Absolutely. And these matches, I said it on the last, I don't know which match I said it about anymore, that it was hard for me to, the Zack Sabre and Toru Yano match. Where it's hard for me to suspend my disbelief.
Yeah.
And it's just absolutely... You can't suspend your disbelief with matches like these. It's just awful.
It shouldn't be up to the fans to make up for their bad booking at the end of the day. It should be up to them to put on good shows and not do stupid stuff, you know, at the end of the day. And I think it's just an Americanized viewpoint, you know, because on TV, this kind of stuff would happen. Mm. You know, I mean, look on any show that happened this week on TV, and there'll be something as stupid as this match on it. at the end of the day, or is illogical at least. Maybe it'll even be entertaining if it's an undercard stuff, but it still will be illogical and dumb, and it's okay because American fans have been conditioned for that for so long. But when you're watching the G1 climax, this is not what I want to see.
And it doesn't have to be.
Nor do the fans. Clearly,
the Finlay and Evil match drove away interest. Clearly.
Yeah, that's undisputable. If you look at the way the tournament, I mean, you were talking about it. We were talking about it off the air. You say people saw people leave the show or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody you talked to that was there, I believe. I don't want to quote you on this. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, look at the attendance. Look at the people's reactions. Look at everything going on with Evil. And I still say, you look at the pandemic, I think giving Evil those months was a big reason why. And nothing against
– it hurt business.
Absolutely. And nothing even against the person who portrays this character, Watanabe. Nothing against him. But when you put a gimmick like this in main events, it's clearly a turnoff. You know, like, that's been proven. It's not even, like, this is something we can say.
Yeah, you mentioned the Voodoo Murders, who in recent months in All Japan have clearly been a knockoff of the House of Torture. And that hasn't worked out either.
Which the House of Torture was originally a knockoff of Voodoo Murder. The original
Voodoo Murder. Yes, we're full circle now.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But yeah, that's another thing. I mean, we're seeing Suwama now getting a title shot. We'll see how that plays out. But I mean, we talked about it earlier. All Japan had a great number for their standards right now for these recent shows, which were small shows. And without all of that nonsense in the main event. So, you know, you have to think about it. I think your point was very true. There's room for this on these cards, just not in main events. And in my opinion, not in the tournament. Like, if they were non-tournament matches, I would be totally okay with it. But when you're going for the world title, I do think we need to try to protect the prestige of that a little bit more overall. But that's, I know that I'm probably alone in that. I know most people probably don't mind it that much, but that's just how I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was probably one of the worst shows
of the whole
year. Yeah, yeah. Whew, and that's the G1. Right, so you said it. So we are going to Tokyo. 25th, that's tomorrow in Kurken, main event Zanada versus Kaito Kiyomiya. That's where it's at for him, for Zanada. Following Katsuhiko Okada versus Yoshihashi, a big pressure on him. Second day in Kurken has the main event of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jeff Cobb in their rematch. Also one more Bullet Club lore, Tama Tonga versus David Finlay underneath that. And then Ota Ward with Okada versus Will Ospreay in the main event. That's the match that you pointed to as one of the big G1 matches one of the few big G1 matches that we have this year. So that's what is up on the calendar for the G1 climax.
Do you have any opinion about the standing? Like, do you feel like anybody's closer to, like, we're any clearer in terms of who's going to advance to the tournament? Because the thing is, it feels early, but at the same time, we're also at the halfway point in terms of the block play.
Yeah, I don't think that there is any real surprises to this point. I expected Block A to turn out like it is. I expected Okada to go big in Block B.
Yeah.
Ospreay probably is going to follow suit. I had Finlay on top of Block C. In Block C. Maybe he's winning over Takagi. I had Takagi advance, but that might also not happen. We'll see. Maybe it's Kingston. Block D, Zack Sabre and Naito are going to advance. So that's, nothing surprising to me, to be honest.
I don't think it's impossible Evil advances from C block, actually, to kind of go back to our last
one, which
would be terrible. Yeah. But, you know, Shingo...
Evil has Shingo on the last day, so...
Yeah, Shingo is going to probably do it. But Shingo, they started off in a hole.
Once again, going back to the House of Torture role, Dylan.
Yes.
You fear that Evil is going to knock out Shingo Takagi in the tournament.
Hey, Shingo, they already gave him the tried and true push of losing most of his early matches, so now he's going to come up on a big winning streak now to get back in. But yeah, no real surprise. I thought Phantasmo would get a little bit more respect. I thought that they would give the Musketeers a bit more, here than, what are you really gaining from Owens and Kidd at the end of the day? But they're telling a story, so I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. My only problem is A block is so obvious that it'll be Sonata and Kaito, unless you have a big chase run going in there for the tournament. But I, good tournament so far in terms of the booking, I think it's been pretty solid. I don't really have any problems with anything they've done on that end. Obviously, the last show is so bad, we have a little bit of a negative opinion on things. But I do think still, we're getting to the point now. These next three shows coming up in general, not just the night nine with the Osprey and Okada, but all of these shows. Now you're getting back into Tokyo. You're getting into bigger shows. The fans may be hotter now for this one. Maybe you'll put on better shows to make them hotter as well, hopefully. After these three nights we have coming up, this is the integral part of this tournament, in my opinion. Yeah. After these three shows, we're going to be able to have a definitive, okay, either this tournament is floundering and it hasn't turned out as much as they wanted, because, like, you know, we were on some downhouses, and if things don't work out for the next three shows, then we're saying, okay, this whole tour is kind of in some trouble. If they come in with big shows, hot matches, you know, main event, match of the year level match, you know, a definitive tournament match, maybe we could say, hey, they've turned it around. We just had to get over that malaise in the night three, night six or whatever. And now we're in a big part. So these three shows are integral, in my opinion.
It's also going to be integral how they draw in these shows. Because going back to what we said when we talked about the One Night Dream show, where Noah once again took the shine away from the G1 opening weekend, they sold Kurken Hall completely out, and you'd expect something similar with the G1 Climax. So we'll wait and see for the attendances here.
Absolutely. 1,400 is their goal. Mm-hmm. Let's see if they can meet it on these Kurken shows.
Right. Yes, so that's the G1 Climax so far. Going quickly at the end, Dylan, to the five-star Grand Prix. It started in Ottawa. That's also going to be a comparable margin for New Japan Pro Wrestling, because after Kirkenhall, there is Ottawa, and Stardom drew 1,747 fans for their opening of the five-star Grand Prix. That, in the end, got overshadowed by Saya Kamitani's elbow injury, sadly, but otherwise, I've not seen the show yet. A very good show.
Yeah, the show was fantastic. All the matches are good. You got to remember there's 15-minute time limit for some of them. There was really no down period. A lot of the earlier matches were really fast-paced, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, that type of deal. You had a lot of good stuff. The best matches to me were Shuri and Suzu Suzuki and Julia and Sariano. If you liked Julia and Yukihi from March, which I know we both did, then you will really like this match, mm-hmm. because they worked a very similar style, and Ano was just as good as Yuki at working this style. And I thought that was a fantastic match. I thought, like, I loved that match so much, and Shuri and Suzu was another great match. Different style, not as much of a brawl as Julian's and Ano, but a great match, as you would expect with the level of talent from them. So watch both of those two. Really, the whole show was good, though. I don't think there was any down period for it. Iwatani and Hazuki was another good match. Not as good as the two I mentioned, but still a good match. Momo and Mirai. Momo brought her working boots on here. So, you know, up and down the card was all good. Mirai May, good performance versus Azumi. But the main event, it's all going to be overshadowed by the injury in the main event and the angle they did. So basically, Kamitani climbed up this lighting thing, like a rig, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. She did a huge dive onto like 10 people, but she dislocated her elbow at the end of it with the landing, unfortunately. And it was kind of scary because she wasn't really moving a lot early on, so nobody really knew what was going on. But clearly an injury that happened, and then they did this. So I loved how terrible this came across. It was terrible luck, unfortunately. You know, like, that's all you could say. You can't blame anybody for this. It was a terrible luck that happened. So they had done this, and immediately after this, they had to go to the planned angle they shot, which was came across awful, considering what happened. It came across even worse, since the big story of this tournament, or before this tournament, was the cage match. Saya saved Utami, and they're back together, united again, best friends, like Aphrodite's back, Queen's Quest is united, blah, blah, blah. So this great story of friendship happens, and so one of those members faces a horrible injury that's basically eliminated her from the tournament, and what do you do next? Your best friend, who was all of this emotional stuff that happened, she has to cut a promo for this new American star, Megasus, who is now here.
Megan Bain made challenge.
Yeah, she attacked Tom Nakano, and Utami was like, She cut this goofy promo for her, and was like, "Hey, look at Megan. I met her in America. She's pretty cool, strong. She's badass. Look at this." And like that was literally her promo. If you look at it, and it's like you're cutting this promo while your best friend and tag partner has her tournament ruined by an injury, a serious injury that was scary. So it all came across horribly. Like the fans didn't want to see this at the time, and again. I feel for them in some ways because it's like, obviously, ideally, you would have had an angle. I guess, I mean, I don't know what their plan was for the match, whether it was going to be a draw or Tom winning or what. But they set up this match. I knew that it was going to be an outside person that was going to challenge because they're doing this show in the middle of the tournament, which is really stupid, where they set up a title match. A lot of people were talking about Kamatai.
Haven't they done similar stuff last year, too?
Yeah, they did the same thing. Nanai got a shot last year.
Right.
Like it was in the middle of the tournament. So they're doing the same thing again, which was dumb then, even though I really liked that match. We'll see how this plays out. But I knew it was going to be an outside person. Sandra is trying to tell me Kamatani was going to challenge. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, it'll be an outsider. And I thought it might be a big Joshi name. They might get like last year with Nanai again. Why not bring Nanai back? That would be great. like that's my answer to everything, pretty much. It started, like, put Nanai in this match. But they instead went with the outside foreigner, Megan Bain. I don't know that much about her, to be honest with you.
Yeah, she has a very impressive physical appearance.
Yeah, the look is great.
I've seen some of her matches in, was it Beyond or Wrestling Open? She's been all right there. I don't know if she's ready for this position.
You just wonder why. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, the whole show in the middle of the tournament, I don't really love, to be honest. But this definitely wasn't a star. I feel bad for her because she had to come out after the injury. It wasn't her fault at all. It's just unfortunate that the timing was so bad and very bad luck all around. But other than that, a successful show, just skip the main event. Like, you know, you don't need to see that. I would say just take my word for it that they're going to do this red belt match with Megasus and Tom Nakano. And I mean, what's the point of this ultimately? Like, she's not going to win the title. Like, everybody knows that. It's just try to establish. But hey, here's the thing. Mariah May has been an excellent signing for Stardom. Like, as a foreigner who was not, she didn't have a ton of matches under her belt before she got there. Not really well known, but she has performed so well and fit in with the roster, seems to be very popular doing storylines on Twitter, retweeting everything that mentions her, doing a lot of great work for the company itself and herself as a wrestler. So hopefully Megan Bain can take that same initiative that Mariah has and be that kind of level. Like you said, the look is there, great powerhouse type performer, maybe add something a little different. I'm not taking anything away from her. It was just the timing of it that really hurt for them. So that was the one bad part, but still the show was worth watching. The tournament got off to a really great start otherwise, but especially the two matches I said, Shurin Suzu and Julia and Ano, that's what you need to watch for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also going back to our fantasy draft, this leaves me with a one spot open because I have in this tournament, I have Tam Nakano, Utami Hayashishita, and Saya Kamitani. With Saya Kamitani out, I need to make a change.
Enter Pegasus.
Yes, exactly. No, probably not. Probably not going to get any big points. I think I'm going with Suzu Suzuki.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's had a great match overall. So we'll see what happens. I'm gonna have to replace Asuka, who got the big win in Catch the Wave. Like that's what I was going for. I had to be a wave respector, Catch the Wave respector there. August is here. I'm going to have to get a third Grand Prix member to represent me. I already know who it's going to be honest. But now that you picked Suzu. But a great pick, Suzuki, a wonderful wrestler. And big things coming now that she's with Stardom and away from prominence full time. So the tournament should be great. The scheduling I worry about, but we'll see what this mid-tour show does. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yes, so that's pretty much it for the show. We discussed all the topics that I had on the menu for today. Looking at the G1 schedule, Dylan, we're going to discuss that off the air a bit, but I think we'll go be back at the end of the week.
Yeah.
That should be working out. So, yeah, I want to thank all of you for listening to this show. And I just have one thing left to say. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.